Once again, we come to your word, Jesus. We come looking to know what you would have us to know, to hear what you would have us to hear, to see what you would have us to see. No matter how many times we come to your word, there's always so much more that we can see and contemplate. And as we look at this transitional period in the narrative, may we hear Jesus. May we hear your voice through your Spirit to teach us, to encourage us, to chasten us, whatever it is that we need at this moment. We pray this in your precious and holy name. Amen. So like I said, Jesus has just finished this discourse. He's been talking about ministry. He's been asked a series of questions. Who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? That's the first question he gets asked. Jesus brings a child, puts him in the middle. Then he gets asked about divorce, and he gets asked by a rich young ruler, what do I have to do in order to get to earn my spot in the kingdom? And there are all these questions that he has. Peter asks him, how often should I forgive? There's this series of questions. And in Matthew chapter 20, we have this moment where we are introduced to this idea that Jesus is now headed to Jerusalem. Matthew chapter 20 and verse 17. Oh, it's so nice to be able to see it. I don't know if you guys can tell. I get new glasses. They're bifocals, so I'm officially old. But now I get to do the old person look down. You know? And I always thought my dad was being like weird when he would look over his glasses like this at me. But now I realize it's because that's the part of his glasses he could see me in. So Matthew chapter 20 and verse 17. As Jesus was going up to Jerusalem. So this is we're moving toward Jerusalem now. In the middle of chapter 19, we had this moment that Jesus was headed to Judea. All right. But now he's headed to Jerusalem. Jesus is going up to Jerusalem. And he took the 12 disciples aside on the way, and he said to them, see, we are going up to Jerusalem. This is a great lesson. This has nothing to do with this, but just remember, they were walking toward Jerusalem, and they'd all lived here their entire lives. They had been to Jerusalem before, and yet for some reason Jesus needs to remind them where we're going. Because they've already forgotten. All right. See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified, and he will be raised on the third day. This is the third time that Jesus has given this statement to his disciples. It's the third time he said it. And in verse 20, so Jesus is just given this ministry discourse. He's been talking about all these relational things, all this relationship stuff, and he's going through all of this. Excuse me for a second. And as he gets through this, they're headed toward Jerusalem. They're on the road to Jerusalem. So they previously had come down to Judea on the other side of the Jordan. So they're in what is today modern Jordan. They cross the Jordan River. They're headed toward Jerusalem. They're going to go through Jericho. And Jesus pulls them aside. He says, I'm going to die. I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be flogged. All this stuff. The disciples go, okay. And then in verse 20, then the mother of the sons of Zebedee, this is James and John, the disciples, James and John, the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, what do you want? And she said to him, now keep that question in mind, what do you want? Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left in your kingdom. And Jesus answered, you don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink? And they said to him, we are able. He said to them, you will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and my left hand is not mine to grant. But it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father. And when the 10 heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus called them to him and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. Whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, I'm going to get, there's a whole bunch we could pack out, we could get out of this, but I want to just really quickly get these little bits. All right, so when they ask, when James and John send their mommy to ask Jesus a question, all right, because they know, now this, I can't prove this absolutely, but it seems like the mother of James and John may have been related to Mary. She may have been her cousin or something, or they may even been sisters. We're not really sure. So James and John, they feel like they are entitled to something from Jesus. Simon was told he's going to be the rock, right? And so they're like, well, if Simon's going to be the rock, the least we can get is chairs, right? So they send their mother, all right, to talk to Jesus. She kneels before, because Jesus has this thing. He listens to older women. His mother and you know, he has this thing where he's got a strong relationship with these older women who are part of his disciple group. And he says to her, "What do you want?" She says, "I want them to sit on the left side and the right side." Why the left side and the right side? Well, these are the positions of honor for a king. These are the top servants. So, okay, Peter's going to be the rock, so he's got kind of a special spot, but we want to be there in judgment with Jesus. We want to sit on his left hand and his right hand. We want to be sitting with him when he's enthroned, so that we have a position of honor and everybody can see that we have a position of honor. Because you know what? You can't see the rock that a building is built on, right? They want a visible sign of their authority and their leadership. And Jesus says, "Well, are you willing to drink the cup that I'm going to drink?" And they go, "Yeah, of course we are." And Jesus is going, "No, you're not. You're not ready for this. You don't know. But even if you were, this isn't mine to give. Okay? This isn't mine to give." But then he talks about it. He says, "Don't you know that there are those who." As they go through their journey here as Gentiles, verse 24, "Do you not know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them?" The word ruler there means the primary one, the first one, all right, the top, all right, lord it over the Gentiles. They take for themselves this kind of authority. But it's not going to be that like that among you, because Jesus has just been making the point. Right, all through the previous discourse, he's been making the point that our hierarchies, our authority structures, they're meaningless in terms of God's grace. Just be grateful that God is at work. Just be rejoice in what he's doing. And everybody's trying to find a way to again, they're trying to find, where do we fit in the system? Are we higher than this guy? You know, so it's like James and John, like Peter got to be the rock. We also got to go to the Transfiguration. We should get something special, a badge or a sash or a chair or something that marks us as special. And when we extend this into what we know about the history of the church, we find that very, very early on in the church, in the first couple of centuries, the bishops, the leaders of the great metropolitan areas like Constantinople and Rome and Jerusalem and Alexandria, Egypt, they started to appropriate for themselves things that made them unique, vestments that declared them to be important. Recently, Bob Prevost became Pope Leo XIV. I saw a meme online which made me chuckle to no end. It said, he is now the second most popular Bob in Christian history. And it had a picture of Bob the tomato from VeggieTales. You notice all the vestments. The cardinals have their particular robes, and they wear certain signs of authority, and they have the fish hat. I don't know if you know that big hat is supposed to be the mouth of a fish. And they have all their stoles and all that stuff, and you can tell who they are by what they're wearing and what color they wear. And believe it or not, the actual color of the red of the cardinal's vestments tells you. Everything's super important, the shape of their shoes, all those things. Why do human beings do that? We do that to establish a hierarchy for ourselves. We do it to say, I'm here, you're here, one day you might be at my level. But you notice there's no special vestments given to Peter or James or John. In fact, Jesus makes the point that the first among you should be servants, because the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The prophet Isaiah, looking forward to the Messiah, said there would be no beauty in the Messiah, that we should desire him, that we should want him. There's nothing that we look at and we go, oh. You know, I think sometimes we grew up with our family Bibles, right? And you get this feeling that Jesus walked around in a white robe with a glowing dish behind his head, with light coming down from heaven. And everybody's like, oh, Jesus, he's important. We need to listen to him. You know, and then he's got his lesser guys. They're also there, often carrying Bibles, which is weird because the Codex was invented till hundreds of years after. But we have in our mind that you know, there was something special, but there wasn't. In a crowd, Jesus looked just like every other Jew in the crowd. He was discriminated against just like every other Jew in the crowd. He was honored just like every other rabbi would be honored in the crowd. There was nothing unique about him from the outward appearance. He says, the Son of Man just came to serve. Not to be served, but to serve. Because here's your question now. But here's what Jesus does. This is what I love when Jesus gets confronted with a question like this, and he goes, here's a perfect opportunity to flip the script so that everybody can understand what I'm trying to say. So what do we have? Two brothers who for 3 years have been following Jesus. Their mom comes to Jesus, asks that they get a special place of honor. They've already had the privilege of walking with Jesus for all this time. They've heard him speak, all this stuff. They think they deserve a position on the left and the right of the Messiah. And as they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed them. Verse number 29. As they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed them. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. Two disciples who got to see the transfiguration of Jesus, got to see Jesus in his revealed glory, have gotten to hear from Jesus so much, and yet they ask a question that indicates they are blind to the reality of who Jesus is. And then two blind men who have seen nothing. Now, you'll notice, by the way, where are these blind men? They're on the roadside out of the city. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? That means that these blind men became blind because of a disease that made them unclean. Leprosy or syphilis or something like that. They had contracted a disease that caused their blindness, and they were unclean. Because if you were born blind, you know, we know from the book of John and we know elsewhere, if you were born blind, you were allowed to be in the synagogue. You were allowed to be in the city. You could be in the city if you were born blind. But if you had a disease that made you blind, then that made you unclean, and you were outside of the city. So here are these two men, two blind men on the roadside outside of Jericho. Now, if you ever get a chance to visit Jericho, you will very quickly realize there is nothing outside of Jericho. You know what is outside of Jericho? The road to Jerusalem. That's it. There is nothing in Jericho. Jericho is not a great place to live. It just happens to be right at the ford across the Jordan River, and that's why Jericho exists. But it is not a great place. I mean, Herod built palaces there. He brought in water from hundreds of miles away. They built from the river, and then they brought materials from hundreds of miles away to build a really glorious palace. But these blind men are outside of the city on the way to Jericho. They're on the roadside. And they heard that Jesus was passing by, and they cried out, Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David. And to their eternal shame, in verse 31, the crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent. Why? You bunch of unclean, blind lepers or whatever you are, be quiet. We need to listen to what Jesus has to say. Now, what is Jesus doing at this point? Jesus is just walking. But they're just one. Just in case Jesus says something we don't hear, we do not need a couple of blind beggars crying out for mercy from Jesus while we are trying to listen to what Jesus has to say. Know your place. The crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent, but they cried out all the more, Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David. And stopping, this is the second time, by the way, in the Gospel of Matthew, that Jesus stops in the middle of a crowd. The first time is when he heals the woman with the issue of blood. Jesus stops. He called them. Remember what I said? Remember the question I asked you to remember from earlier? What do you want me to do for you? See, the mother of Zebedee, mother of the sons of Zebedee, when Jesus asked her that question, what did she want? She wanted a place of honor. She wanted a place of privilege. She wanted something she thought her sons deserved. What do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, let our eyes be opened. Why do they need their eyes to be opened? So they can see Jesus. They just want to see him. James and John have had 3 years of a privileged position alongside Jesus. They've seen miracles. They've performed miracles. They've seen the transfiguration, Jesus glorified on the mountain. They have seen Jesus do extraordinary things. They have heard Jesus do things, and yet they're still blind to their place in the kingdom. And two blind beggars, diseased and unclean, who are rebuked by the crowd, all they want is mercy from the Son of David so they can see him. And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes. You know, whenever Jesus touches somebody, it's almost always somebody that's unclean. Go back through the Gospels and watch it. When Jesus touches somebody, it's almost always somebody that a rabbi shouldn't touch. The woman with the issue of blood, dead bodies, lepers, all right? He touched them. And immediately they recovered their sight and did what? Followed him. See, we have this contrast at the end of this narrative, bridging into Jesus' appearance in Jerusalem, where we have two disciples who have had all the privileges in the world in their relationship with Jesus, asking Jesus to elevate them to a position higher than everybody else. And Jesus contrasts them with two blind, diseased beggars who all they want is to be elevated to being normal like everybody else. See, the disciples want to be better than everybody else. The blind men just want to follow Jesus like everybody else. They don't need a priority. They don't need a rank. They don't need a title. They don't care whether there's a chair or not. They've been sleeping on the ground for years. All they want is to be able to see the one that they call the Son of David. And as soon as they see him, they follow him. Now, I can't get into this, but I just want to tell you, when you read Jesus' triumphant entry, I'm going to bring this up again next week, you need to realize why everybody throws the palm branches down when Jesus walks into Jerusalem. Do you know why? Because there is an army, a small army of blind men who can see, lepers who are clean, Lazarus at the front of the line, who was dead. And they are saying, Jesus is coming to Jerusalem. And the people who hear Jesus is coming from the mouth of the deaf, of the mute, when they hear it from the mouth of the man who is dead, when they hear it from the lips that were leprous and unclean, when the blind men are saying, we saw him and he's on his way, man, if you're not ready for him to be the Messiah, I don't know what's wrong with you. There is a parade of people that Jesus touched headed to Jerusalem. It's so often we get the depiction as just Jesus, he's on a little donkey, you know, and he's coming through and there's a couple of kids throwing palms down. And it's like, oh, isn't this beautiful? And really, it's just the artist didn't have the time to paint the whole group. All right? Illustrating Bibles takes a lot of work. But in reality, if we read this, Jesus comes with an entourage of people saying, I was unclean. I was full of demons. Jesus is headed there for Passover. When a rabbi heads to Passover, he brings his disciples with him. And Jesus' disciples aren't just the 12. Jesus' disciples are outcasts, misfits, tax collectors who have surrendered their lives, prostitutes, demon-possessed, blind people, deaf, mute, paralyzed people, women who had issues of blood, and they're all walking on the way to Jerusalem. That's why the high priests are so terrified of him. Because he's not just saying stuff. He's backing it up. We'll get into that next week when his entry and what wreaks havoc when he does that. But almost everybody that depicts this in cinema and movies and stuff gets it wrong. They just see Jesus just on the power of his own personality. All right, Jesus is surrounded by people saying, have you seen him? Do you know him? Look at who he is. This is what he did. Here are my mom and dad who can tell you I was born blind. All of this is going on. As Jesus goes to be humbled on the cross, he is approached by those who want to be exalted, but he seeks out those who are already humbled. Jesus asks the same question to two different groups of people because they come to him with two completely different motivations. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Now, I might amend this, and I don't want to violate it, but I think when he says to the mother of James and John, he says, what more do you want from me? Because they've already received so much from him. But when he comes to these men, he says, just tell me what you want. This imbalance between those who wish to be elevated above others and those who just want to be treated like everybody else is going to carry out in a microcosm as James and John have to learn to humble themselves. They have to learn through the crucifixion, through the arrest and crucifixion and burial and resurrection of Jesus, they have to learn what it means to really drink of the cup that Jesus asks them to drink of. Because even though they've been following Jesus, they still got this attitude, they still got this feeling of this hierarchy and power and control. And yet here are these blind men. And let me leave you with a question. You realize that, I'll get to the question, you realize that the homeless in America have more, and I know that sounds weird, but it's true, have more than most of the people that live in the world. If you see a homeless person on the side of the road and they've got their stuff and all that stuff and they're collecting $5, $10 or working a minimum wage job, just remember that they're, for most of the world, what they have would be an upgrade. They have access to clean water. They have access to a job if they need one, a day job just to get enough money to buy whatever they want. They have clothing. All right, we may not like the shelter that a lot of the unhomed have, but they have shelter. And so much of our world, I mean, I grew up during the Ethiopian famines. I don't know if any of you remember the constant commercials by the groups that then took all that money. But there were hundreds of thousands of people dying in Ethiopia and Somalia and all of these. We live in a world where if a bridge falls down. All right, we live in a world where, okay, this is the great example. I know I'm going to get in trouble for this. Okay, all right, but okay, there was a tall ship, Mexican Coast Guard or whatever, crashed into Brooklyn Bridge, and a couple of people died, and it was like, oh my gosh, a couple of people died. Expand your scope a little bit, because every year in Bangladesh, thousands die. from the typhoons and flooding. And how much news coverage does that get? All right. Every year, I mean, if you expand the scope, read some of the stuff that happens in Central Asia where poorly constructed bridges collapse and thousands of people are killed. And how much news coverage do we get of that? Zero in the United States. We have this affluence that we don't really understand what it means to be on the roadside. I'm not sure we comprehend as a society, myself included, what it means to be as desperate as these blind men for Jesus. Instead, we often come to God looking for special treatment. And we do. Let's just be honest, we do. I remember distinctly a young man coming to me about 20-some years ago telling me how happy he was that his soccer team had won in a Christian school league because they prayed. And he was well-intentioned, but do you realize that the other team prayed too? It's a Christian school league. So what you're saying is our team got special grace from God to win that soccer game while the other team, well, they were second rate. We pray for things that most people would be desperate to have. You know, when we abuse what we've been given and then we ask God to take care of some problem that we have. I mean, we sometimes, and I do it too, I'm not saying it, but we very casually thank God for the food that we have without realizing we actually, all you have to do is go to a grocery store in another country to realize, holy moly, do we have a lot of food. Like it is insane. When you go to the store, and I'm talking about other Western countries, they're like, you guys have so much. There's this British guy my wife watches that lived in, he goes, you guys have so many cereals. You have a whole aisle of cereal. And we do, right? We go to Walmart and you're like, you know, I mean, I'll be honest. I get dragged into the, I buy all my clothes on Amazon because whether my size has changed or not, it doesn't matter. I'm still buying it. I don't have to go to the store and try it on. That's how it works. All right. My wife, we go into the store and we go, I am so confused. I've mentioned this before. I am so confused by women's pant sizes. They make no sense. I'm like, there's 16s here, there's 16s there. I'm holding them up. They're neither side. They're not the same. Those are not the same. And it's like, well, there's a boot cut, and there's a straight cut, and there's a narrow cut, and there's a skinny jean, and there's a that cut, and there's a this cut. I'm like, listen, all I want is a piece of denim with a belt. They're never going to be short enough, so I'm not worried about the length. I just want to make sure it goes around my waist. But, you know, and you walk through and you realize how much we have. You realize how much we throw away. We don't know what it's like to be on the roadside. And Jesus is just, now he's not looking for us to make ourselves poor. I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that we should all just give everything up and form some hippie commune. All right? What I am saying is we need to understand that often what we think is super important to us is really just asking God for special treatment. We are so blessed that we don't understand how blessed we are. And I think Jesus puts James and John through this so they can recognize how good and wonderful it is to be just who they were. To be blessed and to accept that you're being blessed. To be truly grateful without expectation of more. Because I will tell you that our Western society is geared toward the more. We always want more. We want more money. We want more. I mean, all you have to do is watch any Apple keynote as they try to sell you on the new iPhone. This iPhone has a camera. It's the greatest camera we've ever made. It's an amazing camera. It has 700 million megapixels of a camera. I still don't even really know what a megapixel is, but cameras have more of them, and they sell you on this product, and it's all this. You have to have this, and we feel like we've gotta have, right? Gotta have. Now, God blesses us, and when he blesses us and he gives to us, we should be grateful. But we shouldn't be grateful because we got more. We should be grateful because He is more. And James and John had to learn a very important lesson. Because up until this point, following Jesus hadn't really been real. I'm going to leave you with this. We'll come back next week. Up until this point, following Jesus, you could walk away. You could just not show up. Nobody knew who you were. Hanging out with some rabbi in Galilee. But when Jesus shows up in chapter 21, and He starts tearing up the temple, His disciples suddenly are starting to get identified with Him. There's no escape in that cup after that point. Things are about to get real. And they needed a humility that was going to take them through their failure so they could live in the glory of His grace. So here's the question. Do you even know what it means to be on the roadside? And would you follow Jesus if you were? Or do we follow Jesus because we're already so affluent and so rich and so full with our religious heritage and all the blessings that we have? We follow Jesus because of what we have and yet somehow need more. Or would we follow Him if we were blind men on the roadside? Do you join me in a word of prayer? We are truly blessed, Jesus. We are blessed in ways that are unfathomable, really. To have what You have given us, both individually and, I mean, as a congregation, to have what we have is a tremendous blessing, a humbling blessing, because it's more than we deserve. Help us to be willing to humble ourselves in gratitude. And not just saying thanks because of what we have, but because it truly is all Your grace. And may we go into this world knowing not that we are better than everyone else, but that we have been given an opportunity to be a part of Your kingdom and to invite others to be a part of that. I thank You for the great, gracious way that Your people give to one another, pour into relationships, love and teaching and mentoring and correction and encouragement and celebration. Because I think we have grasped in our own little ways, in our small ways, just how glorious it is to be a part of what You are graciously doing.